Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. In Oxford, we actually don't chant the when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, we actually don't chant these verses. So I always forget the melody or the way we chant them here. So if you, how would you chant the verse? Because I when I read them, then I read two lines together, but that'll be too difficult to chant it. So how would you do it? Two at a time? You do? Well, yeah, but no, I mean four at a time. There's two in the book. Kabu Sharge Uttai, Kabu Narke Dubai. Dandya Jane Raja Jena Nadita Chubai. Okay, that will work. Kabhu, sometimes. Sharge, to higher planetary systems. Urtai, he rises. Kabhu, sometimes. Narake, in hellish conditions of life. Dubai, he is drowned. Dandya Jane, a criminal. Raja, a king. Jena, as. Nadite, in the river. Chubai, dunks. Like plunges. In the material condition, the living entity is sometimes raised to higher planetary systems and material prosperity, and sometimes drowned in a hellish situation. His state is exactly like that of a criminal whom a king punishes by submerging him in water and then raising him again from the water. Purport. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it is stated, Asango Hyayam Purusha. Asango Hyayam Purusha. The living entity is always free from the contamination of the material world. One who is not materially infected and who does not forget Krishna as his master is called Nityamukta. In other words, one who is eternally liberated from material contamination is called Nityamukta. From time immemorial, the Nityamukta living entity has always been a devotee of Krishna, and his only attempt has been to serve Krishna. Thus, he never forgets his eternal servitorship to Krishna. Any living entity who forgets his eternal relationship with Krishna is under the sway of the material condition. Bereft of the Lord's transcendental loving service, he is subjected to the reactions of fruitive activity. When he is elevated to the higher planetary systems due to worldly pious activities, he considers himself well situated. And when he is subjected to punishment, he thinks himself improperly situated. Thus, material nature awards and punishes the living entity. When the living entity is materially opulent, material nature is rewarding him. When he is materially embarrassed, material nature is punishing him. Kabu sharge uttai kabu narke duvai, dandya jane raja jena nadite chuvai. In the material condition, the living entity is sometimes raised to higher planetary systems and material prosperity, and sometimes drowned in a hellish condition. His state is exactly like that of a criminal whom a king punishes by submerging him in water and then raising him again from the water. Om agyana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave nama mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripatam aham vande shri gurum dinatarinam vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama. King Kulashekar, one of the Alvars, a great Vaishnava and saintly king, has a beautiful prayer called the Mukunda Mala, a garland for Mukunda. And in there he prays, Mukunda Murdna Pranipatya Yache Bhavantam Ekantam Iyantam Artham Avismritas Tvat Charanara Vinde Bhave Bhave Mestu Bhavat Prasada. He prays to the Lord and he says, Oh Lord Mukunda, I bow before you. You might ask, well, why have I come? Why do I bow to you? And he says, I've come to just tell you one thing. There's only one thing that I want. Above everything else, all the other things that I could ask for, I do not care for. I do not see the value of it. But I just ask for one thing. And what is that? He says, Bhave Bhave Mestu Bhavat Prasada. He says, Avismritistvat Charanara Vinde Bhave Bhave Mestu. He says, let me remember your lotus feet. Bhave Bhave, birth after birth. And he says, that, if you give me this, this will be your prasada. This will be your real mercy. And he continues, he says, Naham vande natvacharanayor dvandva madvandva heto. He says, I do not come to you, I do not pray to you to become free from the duality of this world. We read in this verse, in this world we have happiness and distress. We're torn, we're thrown back and forth between cold and heat, between light and darkness, between pleasure and pain. And he says, but I do not come to you to pray and ask you to relieve me from these dualities. He says, because I like dualities, actually, because here I have your 2 feet in front of me, and they're a duality. So I do not want to be free from all dualities. And he says, Naham vande tava charanayor dvandvama dvandvahet kumbhi pakam gurum api hare narakam napanetum. Nor do I pray to you to save me from the hell, from naraka, from a hellish life, even from the kumbhipaka hell, which is one of the worst hells. They boil you in oil. They fry you in oil there. And he says, I do not pray to you so that I would not have to go to hell. This, I don't care about that. This is not why I've come to you either.
Ramya Rama Mridutanulata Nandanena Pirantum.
Nor do I come to you because I'd like to go to heaven. I'd like to go, as we read in this verse, to Swarga, to the Nandana Kanana, to the forest, the pleasure groves of King Indra, where what will I find there if I go there? Well, there will be very beautiful girls there, and together we can enjoy very nicely. But he says, I do not want that either. That is also not why I come. And so you may ask, O Lord, well, why do I come then? And so he says again, Bhave, 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 hridaya bhavane, bhavayeyam bhavantam. He says that bhave, bhave, birth after birth, may I remember you, may I meditate on you, may you exist within the palace of my heart. I've arranged my heart in such a way that it is a beautiful mansion, so please come and live there. Please come and reside in my heart. In case the Lord still didn't get the point, and the Lord might still think, well, maybe he does want something else. He continues and he says, Nastha dharme navasunichaye naiva kamo pabhoge. He says, I do not want dharma. I do not want vasunichaya. I do not want to accumulate a lot of wealth. So I do not want artha. Naiva kamo pabhoge. Nor do I want to enjoy kama. Nor do I want to enjoy sensory pleasures. And so the Lord might think, well, maybe he really wants liberation then. Maybe that's what I should give him. But he says, Nastha dharme navasunichaye naiva kamo pabhoge. Tad tad bhavyam, yad yad bhavyam bhavatu bhagavan purva karmanu rupam. He says, I do not care for liberation either, because whatever may happen to me, whatever I've done in the past, whatever my karma is, just let that run its course. I do not care for that either. But my one desire is yad yad bhavyam bhavatu bhagavan purva karmanu rupam etat prartyam mama bahumatam janma janmantarepi tvatpadambo ruhayuga gata nishchala bhaktirastu. He makes his mind clear and he says, my Lord, etat prartyam, the only thing I ask for, the one thing that I want is that you give me devotion, unflinching devotion, devotion that cannot waver, that is firmly fixed at your lotus feet. And may I have this janma janmantarepi, in life after life. And then he says, deviva bhuviva mamastu vaso narakeva narakantaka prakamam. That whether I reside in heaven, where the gods, where the demigods live, a very opulent life, bhuviva, or whether I reside here on earth, narakeva, or whether I reside in hell, avadhirita sharadara vindo charanaute marane pichintayami. The only thing I will do is I will meditate on your lotus feet, which resemble your feet, which resemble lotuses, maranepi, even in death, even while I die. Quite a conviction, Kulashekhar Maharaj has, that anything he can find in this world, even liberation, to become free from this world, he doesn't consider important. This is not what he wants, but the only thing he wants is to continuously remember the Lord, to meditate on the Lord, to hold the Lord in his heart, in the mansion of his heart. He's a person, as Prabhupada says here, who in his purport, who does not forget Krishna. He, in a way, he doesn't have to pray for this, but the Lord likes to hear what his devotees want, so this is what he prays for. But naturally, his mind flows to Krishna. Naturally, his thoughts go to Krishna. and the pleasure and the pain in this world do not affect him, whether he's in heaven or whether he's in hell. His conviction remains the same. And no matter what situation he's in, he continues to think of the Lord. And we might say, well, we're not quite there yet. This is our aspiration. This is what we'd like to become. But we're stuck here. Our minds go to this uthai and this dubhai, this raising to happiness and this plunging back into into suffering. And in this way, we go up and down in this universe. We go to heaven, we go to hell, we come to earth, and we travel up and down. But we also go up and down in our daily life. Sometimes we feel up and we're happy, and sometimes we feel really down and we're really depressed and we're suffering, and we're overwhelmed with the pain, either mental, physical, or whatever, that we experience in this world. This verse is part of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings to Sanatana Goswami. And if you remember from not too long ago, just a few verses ago, Sanatana Goswami approached the Lord, who's on his way back to Jagannath Puri from Vrindavan. And he approaches the Lord and he asks two questions. He says, there's two things that I do not know. And the first one is, who am I? And the second one is, why am I suffering? And they're the two questions that all philosophers repeatedly come back to. Who are we and why do we suffer? And Sanatana Goswami continues to say, he says, I do not know the answer to these two questions, and because I do not know the answer to these two questions, nothing I will do will bring me any benefit. Nothing, I do not know what is beneficial for me, because I do not know the answer to these two fundamental questions. And so the Lord starts teaching him about the living entity, who the living entity is, and how the living entity is a part of Krishna. And he teaches Sanatana Goswami how we suffer in this world, and more importantly, why we suffer in this world. And then the bulk of the teachings is actually on how to become free from suffering, how to transcend this suffering, and really act upon the answer to that first question, who am I, and really act in relation to Krishna. And this verse is sort of the final verse on that describes bondage, and everything after this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will teach about liberation or how to become free from suffering. And this verse teaches us two important things. The first thing it teaches us is why we suffer, why we experience pain in this world. Prabhupada touches on it in his purports, and it's sort of there in the verse, that we suffer as a punishment, and we might not like the word punishment too much, because it implies that we're guilty of something, and generally we don't like to admit we're guilty of something. But if you like a softer word, we need to be rectified, we need to be corrected. And this is why we suffer. And the other point that is made here is that the suffering is, in other words, is caused by our own actions. And the other point is that we do not actually really experience happiness either, because the happiness we experience, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, is like the happiness a criminal experiences, it's sort of a fairly a common way of punishment or torture even, where you push someone underwater and they're to the point where they're nearly drowned, where they're nearly dead, and then you pull them up again, and they can get some fresh air, some oxygen. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that is like our happiness. It's basically it's not really happiness, but it's just the absence of suffering. We finally can be normal, a sort of a neutral state. So not only do we know why we suffer, but we also know that we don't really enjoy happiness either. And Prabhupada starts in his purport with a strong point. You have this terrible suffering that, if you push someone underwater and you're nearly drowning, it's not a very comfortable situation to be in. I've never been in that, but I can imagine it's not a very pleasant situation. And even when you're pulled up and you can take some breath, you know you're going to be plunged down again. And so that in itself is not very pleasurable either. But Prabhupada starts with a very strong statement, and he says, this intense suffering we experience in this world, he quotes the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, asango hi ayam purusha. The purusha, the self, the soul, who we are, is not touched by this. This is not actually our experience. This is the experience that the body undergoes. But due to false ego, due to ahankara, we identify with the body. Our minds think that whatever the body experiences, whether it's pleasure or pain, is our experience, is an experience that touches the very core of our being. But Prabhupada says, no, it doesn't. We suffer and we enjoy, not because we really suffer and we enjoy, but because we identify with suffering and enjoyment. And so we think, when we experience something pleasurable, we think, oh, let me do this again, this was great. And when we experience pain, we think, oh, let's not try this again. And so in this way, our experience of pleasure and pain in this world make us act in a certain way. We start to repeat activities that give us pleasure and to avoid activities that give us pain. And in this way, we actually become more and more entangled in this cycle of pleasure and pain, and we're pushed under again and pulled up again and again. And in general, we can appreciate that the pain we experience is not our own. That's a comforting thought. That really we do not if we do not identify with the body, we would not experience pain. That's a comforting thought. The other side of it is a little more difficult to realize, that the happiness we experience is really it's the same as the pain we experience, and is not really our own. Generally, we try to avoid the pain, and we're happy to hear that's not a quality of the soul. But the happiness we kind of like, and we'd like to continue that. But the problem with both happiness and pain is, or happiness and distress, is that they both make us very self-absorbed. They make us forget other things. When you're in pain, generally the only thing you think of is the pain you experience, and your whole attention goes to that, and you can't do much other than that. When you experience a pleasure, when you have a really good meal, or you do anything in this world that really gives you a lot of pleasure, generally, the only thing you think about is, I'm having a great time. I'm really enjoying myself at the moment, and so you forget everything else around you, and that is the problem. The Chandogya Upanishad has a very nice passage where it says that our life in this world is like the life Hiranyanidhim nihitam. There is a treasure of gold that is buried in the ground. And those who are akshetragya, those who do not know the field, those who do not know the terrain, they upare upare sancharanta. They keep on walking over this treasure, not knowing that this treasure is right under their feet, because they're absorbed in the things that are above the earth. They cannot see what is below it, and so in this way they'll never find this treasure. And the Chandogya Upanishad continues, and he says, in the same way we live our lives in this world, and we do not know, we are akshetragya, we do not know the the knower of the, we do not know the field and the knower of the field, the soul within the body and the Supreme Lord within our body. And in this way, although we're continuously sort of moving around this treasure that is hidden within us, we never find it until someone tells us about it. And in what follows, to explain the our situation in this world, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu uses a similar analogy. In just a few verses, we'll read how he tells that there. He tells the story of a poor man who is suffering greatly and who is destitute. He doesn't have anything. And one day, an astrologer comes by his village and tells him, actually, your father was a very wealthy man, and your father had a great treasure. But your father died not here, he died somewhere else. And so his treasure, his gold is buried somewhere. But since you're his son, you're the inheritor of this wealth, and so you shouldn't live here in great poverty. He then, after having given him the knowledge that he's actually a very wealthy man and that he doesn't have to live in poverty, he then tells him how to obtain that wealth. And he says, the way you should approach this treasure, he says, don't come to it from the south. Don't approach it. Don't start digging from the southern side. Because he says you'll hit a nest, a hive of wasps, and they will come and sting you. And he says, don't approach it from the west, because there'll be a ghost there. There's a ghost residing there, and he will haunt you and torment you. And he says, don't approach it from the north either, because from the north there's a big poisonous snake living in the ground. And so you'll get bitten by that snake and you'll die. He said, but approach it from the east. The east is the only safe way in which you can approach it. And if you approach it from that way, you will find the treasure and you will no longer suffer here like you do now. The wasps that reside in the south, they're compared to karma, the fruit of activities we perform. That we perform a fruit of activities, but they always come back and sting us. They always harm us later on. The ghost that resides in the West, that is the practice of jnana, of trying to attain salvation, trying to know the Lord by our own intellectual endeavor. But that will only haunt us. Our mind will go crazy, Prabhupada says. The snake that resides in the south, in the north, that is the practice of yoga. That there's some, Prabhupada explains, there's some truth to yoga, but the snake has poison, so will ingest you with poison, and you will become convinced that you are the supreme, and that you're the only thing that you're the only thing that exists, basically. But if you approach it from the east, the astrologer says, then you will find this treasure. And so the east is the path of bhakti. And Prabhupada explains in his purport. Prabhupada sort of elaborates on the story in his purport, and he says, treasures are guarded by yakshas. They're a type of beings that guard treasures, and they tend to harm people that try to take the treasure. And so Prabhupada says, and therefore, this treasure is also guarded by a yaksha, and therefore we cannot approach it on our own. And so even when we approach it from the east, Prabhupada explains, we're actually depending on the mercy of the Lord. It means when we approach it from the east through bhakti, we approach it through the Lord. And the Lord is the one who will dig up the treasure and give us the treasure. And he will protect us from this yaksha. Because we're in this world and we're raised and pushed down. We're raised to happiness, we're pushed down into distress. And we can't really get out of it on our own. we can't really obtain this knowledge on our own. We need the Lord to give it to us, the Lord to appear as a his representative, as a Vaishnava, as someone who has this knowledge and can teach us. Someone like the astrologer who told the poor man that go and dig there and you'll find it. And if we do it in that way, we can come to it. We sometimes think of spiritual life as fairly mechanical. I chant japa, and I'm meditating on the form, on the name of the Lord. And by meditating on the name of the Lord, I will be absorbed in thought of him. And if I do this my whole life, then at the time of death, I will think of Krishna, and I will go to him. But in explaining, in proper explanation, that the process of bhakti is not our endeavor, but it's the Lord we're acting, but it's by the grace of the Lord and supported by the Lord who can protect us from this yaksha. Prabhupada's teaching is something very important, and Kulashekara in his Mukundamala is saying the same thing, that we cannot think of the Lord, but the Lord lets us think of him. The Lord gives us blesses us, gives us his grace by which we can think of him. Kulashekar prays to the Lord. Actually, the very first verse, the verse just before the ones I recited, he says, he lists a whole series of names of the. He addresses the Lord with various names, Sri Valabheti, Varadeti, Dayapareti, and so on. And then the last line of the verse, he says, Sri Valabheti, Varadeti, Dayapareti, Bhakta Prieti, Bhavaluntana Kovideti, Nateti, Nagashayaneti, Jagannivasi, Jalapinam, Pratidinam, Kuruma Mukunda. He prays to the Lord and he says, O Lord, make me a reciter of all these names. And it's very significant. He's not saying, I will recite these names, but he says, O Lord, please allow me to recite these names every day of my life. And so he's saying, these names are here, but it is only by your grace that I can recite these names. It is only by your grace that I will be able to chant these names and meditate on these names and remember you. And so therefore, the verses I recited earlier, therefore he prays that, please, Lord, please let me remember you. This is the only thing I ask. I do not want anything else. This is the only thing I ask. But I cannot do this on my own, because I can only do this through your grace. And so it's a reminder to us that the process of bhakti is not a mechanical process. It is not a process where we're the ones who are doing everything, and the everything else is sort of automatically taken care of. We've just finished with the second years a week of studying the Vedas, and we see that at least some people who follow the Vedic rituals, they have a very mechanical view of this. Their understanding is that I perform a yajna, I perform a sacrifice, and the gods will respond, will have to respond. I perform a yajna, and Indra, by the power that's in this yajna, Indra will be forced to respond. And so, in a way, me, by performing this yajna, I control the Indra, and I control Agni, and I control all these gods. Our process is a different process. Our process is one of grace. We're able to capture Krishna through devotional service because Krishna lets himself be captured, not because he has to. We can think of Krishna while we chant his holy names because he lets us think of him. And so Prabhupada sometimes quoted this verse from the Gita that talks how the in our life the modes of material nature do everything. They're the active part. And Krishna says the last line he says is Ahankaravi Murdhatma Kartahamiti Manyate. Bewildered by the false ego, the soul thinks that he's the agent, he's the doer. And Prabhupada sometimes quoted that verse sort of slightly, you could say, out of context, but applied it to the spiritual life, to spiritual practice. And he says, Ahankaravi Mudhatma, one who is bewildered by false ego thinks, Kartahamiti Manyate. I'm the one who's making progress. I'm the one who's doing the spiritual activities. But Prabhupada says, no, it is Krishna who's doing it. It's by Krishna's grace that he's doing this. And if we realize this, then our life changes quite dramatically. We all go through harder times during japa. Sometimes japa is really nice and we have a good time, and we're uttaya, we're uplifted, we feel uplifted. And sometimes it's a big chore and things go very difficult and we're dubai, we're pushed down into our own mental suffering, and our mind can go very wild and our imagination can go in all directions. But what do we do about that? If we think, I'm the doer, I'm the one who's responsible for this, then we'll come up with all sorts of very creative ways in which we try to enjoy japa, to get the most out of it. If we think Krishna is the one who allows me to chant, and whether there's any pleasure that comes from it or not, whether I'm faced with my own anarthas, with the darkness that's in my heart, or whether I'm faced with the light that's in my heart, Krishna who's present in my heart, that is up to the Lord. The Lord chooses to whom he reveals himself. And so we continue and we pray to the Lord, like Kula Shekhar prays, day after day, please allow me to recite these names. And what happens is irrelevant. We continue and we're just grateful that we have this opportunity to chant. And in a way, Kula Shekhar's prayers are the only thing you really can pray. As Prabhupada says, the soul is not affected by happiness and distress. It is not it's a sensation of the body that the soul experiences because it identifies with it. And so to ask for the pleasure of heaven or to ask to be saved from hell is not. It's once you have that understanding that these are not. These are just experiences that come from identification with the body. You cannot ask for these. It doesn't make sense to ask for these. And so Kula Shekhar's repeated prayers to the Lord that, please let me remember bhave bhave in condition after condition, in life after life, in whatever situation I find myself, please let me remember you. That is the only sensible thing to ask for. That is the only meaningful thing to ask for. Prahlad Maharaj has one of the key teachings of Prahlad Maharaj is that the only thing you can do really, the only thing you really can do in your life is to worship Krishna. That's who it expresses your relationship with him. You can revive your relationship through that. But he also says that this is a natural thing to do because Krishna is all around us. And he would teach his classmates that it is not very difficult to worship the Lord. You don't have to do a lot to worship the Lord. Because he says, Atmatvat sarva bhutanam siddhatvat iha sarvata. That the Lord is the self, the indwelling self, the Lord is present in the heart of every living entity. And the Lord is established, iha, here, right here, sarvata, and everywhere. And so it doesn't take an awful lot of work to turn to the Lord. And once you have that understanding, it's things change. You don't think that I have to do an awful lot to please the Lord, because the Lord is right here. I can turn to Him at every moment. We don't just say Krishna exists, Krishna is, but we say Krishna is here, right here, in this very moment, in our pleasure and in our pain, in our good japa, in our bad japa. And it is, we pray for the grace that we can come to know Him. We pray for the grace that He reveals ourselves to Him, so we can find Him here in this moment, in this experience of pleasure, in this experience of pain, in our residence in heaven, in our residence in hell. And when we do that, then we can really pray like Kulashekar prayed. We can really pray with this full conviction that this is the only sensible thing to ask, and therefore I'm going to insist again and again. Kulashekar could have just prayed it, asked for it once. And actually, if you read the Mukunda Mala, it's practically every verse asks for the same thing, and practically every verse has more or less the same thing. But he's determined, and he says, I'm going to ask again and again and again and again, day after day, I'm going to ask for this, because me asking for this is the only thing I can do. And me asking for this, if I continue to ask for this, maybe the Lord will one day say, okay, I'm pleased with you. You've shown your determination, and you can continue to think of me. And of course, once that happens, it's not that He's going to do anything else, because by praying to the Lord for mercy, you're remembering the Lord. And so once He's going to remember the Lord, what's He going to do? He's going to continue to ask for grace and to continue thinking about Krishna. Let's see. Yeah. And Prabhupada often taught us that that once we come to this level, then whether we're in happiness or distress, we cannot but think of the Lord. When we're in happiness, we think, oh, the Lord is very kind. He has given me a comfortable situation to live in, and a pleasant environment in which I can worship the Lord. And so the devotee, when something good comes his way, when gain comes of its own accord, then he thanks the Lord, and he thinks the Lord is really kind and is bestowing His grace upon me. And when the devotee is suffering, Prabhupada explains, then the devotee thinks, oh, Krishna is really kind, because I should suffer a lot more. But he's teaching me something. He's rectifying me, and he's making me understand the temporal nature of this world. He's making me purified in the heart from all attachment I might have to this world, and he's minimizing. He's doing that in the gentlest possible way, and so when the devotee suffers, he thanks the Lord, and he thinks, the Lord is so kind, so gracious. As the Christians say, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That when the Lord gives or when the Lord takes away, the only response you can have is, blessed be the name of the Lord. Praise be to God. That's the response of someone who has this. The Kaushitaka Upanishad says, the Lord makes people do good activities and enjoy good things. The Lord makes people do bad activities and suffer the consequences. But the Lord is never touched by this. And so in our lives, when we go through our ups and downs, when we're submerged in the water, and when we're gasping for air in the brief seconds that we're out of it, we can remember the Lord and with the Christian say, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. So I think it's about time to end, so I think I'll stop there. Andrew? Prabhupada doesn't whether the two analogies, the question is whether the two analogies, the Chandogya Upanishad and the analogy Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives here, are the same, are really talking about the same thing, and what does the yaksha represent? And what does the treasure represent? Prabhupada, he says here, just a little further. I don't remember him saying exactly what a yaksha is. He just says, a yaksha, a protector of riches, will not allow anyone to take away riches for enjoyment. Such a demon will simply create disturbances. And then he says, in other words, a devotee will not depend on his material resources, but on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can give real protection. And then he quotes some verses. He doesn't say what the yaksha is. The treasure in Chandogya Upanishad it's very clear. It's the treasure is the Lord who's hidden, Nehetam Guhayam. He's hidden in the cave of the heart. Here, as far as I remember, it's the same thing. But of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving more than just the Lord. His whole teaching is he's teaching about the Lord, but about a particular relationship with the Lord as well, that's of a greater intimacy, perhaps, than the way most people read the Upanishads. It's the Lord who's hidden there as well, that is our wealth, and the digging, that's the process. And so we can only approach it from the east, because if we approach it from any other way, we will suffer. And so there's a whole section after this where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is talking about how bhakti really is the only way in which you can obtain the Lord. He says here, devotional service is the only way by which Krishna can be fully satisfied, by which Krishna can be fully reached. And he continues this. Does that? Of course, what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives is not just Krishna, but it is Krishna prema. So it's this loving relationship with Krishna that is of a much greater intimacy and much greater intensity than just a relationship with him. You can sort of see combine the two, I think, in a nice way. Kulashekhar. We see him as a great Vaishnava who is immersed in his love for Krishna. But he's also teaching us something important, that in our understanding the means and the end are the same thing. He's praying to the Lord so he may pray to the Lord. He's remembering the Lord so he can remember the Lord in his life after life. Was there something else to your question or? Well, not necessarily. Prabhupada explains that in this section that suffering makes us do these types of things too. Happiness, generally when we have happiness, we we sort of were content and we really forget. But when we suffer, then there might be a greater inclination to think, well, how can I become free from suffering? And one might turn to Krishna and look for answers. Sanatana Goswami's questions are, who am I and why am I suffering? It's the suffering that impels people to ask and to turn to the Lord. You see this at funerals, when people people become very religious at funerals because they're faced with suffering. And suddenly the natural thing for them to do is to turn to God, for at least for many people. And then later on, when the suffering or the memory of the suffering is further gone, then they become less religious and they forget. As this verse says, you know, we are suffering, and even our happiness is just the absence of suffering. And so even when you have not attained, you haven't gone very far in your spiritual life, if that is your realization, then you can pray like Kulashekhar prays. Initially one might pray just, you know, oh Lord, please make me free from suffering. But when one's knowledge increases and one understands, okay, I'm not this body, and so the things of the body do not affect me if I don't identify with them, then one can come to the next level and actually pray like Kulashekhar Maharaj was praying. Everything we do in spiritual life is sustained by grace. The fact that, you know, we can worship the deity is because the Lord, by His grace, allows us to worship Him that way. The fact that, you know, we're reading Chaitanya Charitamrita this morning is because the Lord, through his devotees, allows us to have this knowledge. Krishna's Kavir wrote this book about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who descended out of grace. He wrote these books. Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Shamananda Pandit made copies of the book, distributed the books, so the book would not be lost and would become more popular. It's by their grace, and in this way it was passed down generations after generations, and Prabhupada translates these books, makes it available for us. And so it's everything we do, the fact that we can chant, the fact that we can read these things, the fact that we even know about the Lord, it's all by the grace of the Lord. And so and once you start thinking like that, then the natural response is that you do things out of gratitude. You feel in debt, and you think, okay, let me do something. Let me reciprocate with that grace, and that is what bhakti is. Bhakti it comes from the root pudge, to share, and it's a sharing in that, in a relationship, and it's the Lord has done so much for us, and it, at some point, when I came here for Janmashtami, I just walked up the just here in front of the castle, and there is a devotee there whom I don't know, and I'd never met him, and he told me he was here for a couple of days, and he, a young devotee, sort of very sort of hadn't come into contact with Krishna for very long. And so he saw me, and he came up to me, and he started talking to me, and he said, so, you know, how long have you been doing this, and this and that. And, you know, I was answering his questions, and then he asked me a question that stuck with me for the whole Janmashtami, and he said, has he done a lot for you? He meaning Krishna. And he was kind of asking, you know, I mean, do you feel like he has done a lot for you? Do you feel like this thing is working? And I kind of said, like, yeah, I think. But then the question stayed with me the whole day, and I was thinking, has the Lord done a lot for me? And my realization was that that what I really should have said is not as much, more than I have done for him. That's the amount. The important thing is not so much. The important thing is, of course, just to understand how much he has done for you. But the other part is, how much have I done for him? And that we can never reach. We can never repay. And so it's a question that's good to ask. Has he done a lot for you, and what have you done for him? The Lord is very kind. The Lord allows us to do a lot. And we pray that the Lord will continue to be kind to us, and to continue to bestow His grace upon us, and to continue to let us chant. Because we see it's not a given thing. So many people chant and stop chanting. And we understand, you know, you might say, well, they have given up, but you can also say, well, they've committed offenses, and the Lord has revoked, sort of pulled back, and they could not see the grace of the Lord. People come to the movement and chant, and initially they're all excited about it, and they're sort of, you know, the first wave, and then after a while that wave dies down, and you're faced with your mind, and you're faced with your imperfections, your shortcomings, your impurities, some people go like, well, it doesn't work. I mean, nothing happens, and they don't see the grace that is working on you. Sometimes the worst sessions of japa, and the worst prayers, you sort of most distracted prayers, can be actually the best, because they have the most effect, because they allow, you know, you persevere and you continue even though it's really difficult, and you come to a deeper understanding of you, but the Lord also reciprocates, and so some people don't see the grace that they're living in, and then Krishna might pull back, or there's no gratitude involved. So it's not a given, and so we should be. Anuradha likes to tell the story of how when she was in the manor, when she was living in Bhaktivedanta Manor, that Akandadi Prabhu was the temple president in those days, and she said he once got all the new devotees together, he wanted to sort of, you know, give them some advice and get to know them a bit, and so he had all these new devotees in the room, and Akandadi Prabhu, you know, a disciple of Prabhupada who had been around for a long time, very experienced, very wise person, he told them, he said, in 10 years, more than half of you will no longer be here. And Anuradha said, everyone in the room was thinking, oh, this is not going to be me. I'll be around. But she says, now looking back, you know, more than 10 years later, it's true, more than half of the people in that room are not around anymore. They're all, you know, gone. And so it's something to reflect on. Prabhupada said that he always prays that Krishna may protect him from Maya. Krishna may protect him from forgetting Krishna and embracing this world again. And so that should be our mood, we think we'll keep chanting until the day we die, and we think we will keep on worshipping the Lord until the day we die. But our ignorance is strong and is deep-rooted, and our desires for enjoyment often, even if we don't notice them, they're sleeping. And as soon as there is an opportunity for enjoyment, they come out. And so we should be dependent on the Lord. We should, as Prabhupada says here about the yaksha, I suppose you could take the yaksha in that way. And Prabhupada says, he says, this is called Rakshishyatiti Vishvasa, the firm conviction that the Lord will protect me. Or he says, quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur Sharanagati, Avashya Rakshive Krishna Vishvas Palam, that the firm conviction that may the Lord protect me. We should depend on that. We should rely on that, and not put so much. Actually, Prabhupada continues, as the surrendered soul must accept the fact that his real protector is Krishna, not his material acquisitions. So we think we will be able to chant until the day we die, because we will persevere, and our material qualities, so the qualities of our mind, of our intelligence, of our situation will allow us to do this. The Prabhupada says, no, it's Krishna who allows us to do this. Krishna will protect us if we let him. Anyway, we're going over time, so I'll let you go for breakfast. Prasad, to the grace. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
A lot of Christian literature.